Hello, and welcome to another virtual author event at the Poison Pen Bookstore. I'm John Charles, and today the Poison Pen is blessed to have with us two best-selling award-winning authors, Daryl Wood Gerber and Krista Davis, both of whom will be talking to us about their latest cozy mysteries. Before we begin, I do want to let those listening in know that the Poison Pen does have copies of both Krista's and Daryl's new book, and we would love to have you either go online or give us a call to order a copy. We would be happy to put one or more on hold for you or in the mail. It's really easy to do. Now I'd like to welcome in Daryl and Krista.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much for letting us come today. This is lots of fun.
Well, thank you. I'd like to start by having you both tell us a little bit about yourself before you became famous authors, because I happen to know that you both had rather colorful careers before your author career. So why don't we start with you, Krista?
Oh, okay. I was thinking Daryl had a much more exciting career than I ever did. I did a lot of things. I was in the hotel business for a while and was an assistant manager of the biggest convention hotel in Washington, D.C. So that was a lot of fun because there were all kinds of celebrities came through, and I just never knew from one day to the next what would happen. You know, all kinds of things happened. Bomb threats, fires. I even was forced to carry something down to the basement where it could be x-rayed by a special group of people who were there keeping the hotel safe from threats. And they decided that the bomb liked me, so I had to carry it down the stairs. Yes, seriously. Anyway, lots of fun. And I was also in the jewelry business for a while. I sold jewelry on Fifth Avenue right next to Gucci. So very high end, very nice, fascinating business, really interesting customers. And all that, you know, is fodder for books because I'm all kinds of people and they all had interesting lives. And as one of my friends said the other day, everybody's got a story. So, and after that, I went to law school and my life became very dull when I practiced law. And so I became a writer.
How about you, Daryl?
Well, I started as an actress. I was going to be an English teacher and I got the opportunity to go into a stage program, and it whetted my appetite. I'd always wanted to be an actress. So I moved to Los Angeles from San Francisco and I started getting commercials and I got a few TV jobs and everything. But while I was acting, I heard that in order to have a brilliant career, to be a star, you needed to write your own material. So I'd had a seventh grade teacher who told me I should never write again. And so it was hard for me to say, gee, I'm going to go into a writing class and, you know, make a screenplay for myself. But I had an idea. So I joined a writing class. It was wonderful for me. It helped me really understand three-act structure and twists and turns and everything else. We read our screenplays out loud. So therefore, I got to act other people's material. It was really, you know, best of both worlds. But I was still acting and I was hoping that my career would take off. I didn't have a clue how to produce that screenplay. I put it into contests. It won a contest, but it didn't get me any place. And then my husband moved across the country for his business. And I said, oh, well, I guess I can write any place. And so I took up my pen and started diving into what I'd always wanted to write, which is a mystery or a suspense. That's what I was writing in my screenplays. And because I wrote more than one screenplay, and lo and behold, I joined the Sisters in Crime group. I joined the Guppies, which is the Great Unpublished. That's where Krista and I met. We became mates when it came to our we had a critique group, and we encouraged each other to start getting into the mystery genre, away from suspense and into the cozy mystery genre. Krista was first. She got the rest of into it. We're now all published. So It was a blossoming of whom I was supposed to become.
Let's talk a little bit about your initial path to publication. You mentioned that, Daryl, and I think both of you are examples for those listening in that perseverance pays, because neither of you really published overnight or even within a year. It was a pretty long track. So can you tell us about your first book and how it came into print? And we'll start with you, Daryl.
Okay, well, because of Krista, I met an agent who was just a lovely agent. I met her at a crime fest up in the Northeast. I was at this time living in Connecticut. And I had written a number of novels and I'd submitted to her and she'd say, well, this is lovely, but I can't sell it. This is nice, but, and I like your writing and I like your character, but I can't sell this. And Krista finally said, what do you think about trying your hand at cozy mysteries? And I had read a few, but I, you know, and I'd read all of Agatha Christie and I was definitely a Carolyn Keene fan. So, you know, I knew what we were talking about, but I wasn't quite sure. So I asked this agent and she said, yes, I'll look at some proposals. So I wrote her one proposal and she said, this is charming, not a big enough hook. This is charming, not a big enough hook. This is charming, not a big enough hook. And I finally said, obviously I don't get this. I had a book out to some agents, a suspense. And I said to my husband, you know what? If that doesn't get an agent, I'm quitting. I'll figure out something else. I'll go back to teaching. I'll figure out what it is I'm supposed to do. And then this agent called me. Her name was Jackie. And she said, do you think you could write about cheese? And I said, yeah. And she said, we have a work for hire at Berkeley. Berkeley Prime Crime was one of the best publishing for cozy mysteries, had a huge department. And I said, oh, okay. And she said, you need to write three chapters. They'll give you the basics. They give me a little Bible and write three chapters and we'll go from there. And, you know, I knew a lot about cheese. I knew cheddar, I knew Swiss, and I knew Monterey Jack. That was it. So I started doing all this research, went to a cheese shop, got all the information, wrote the three chapters, sent them to my critique group. Krista said, once I sent them to the agent, Krista said, now relax because she may not get back to you for about 6 to 8 weeks. And the next day she called me and she said, I love these. I'm going to send them to the publisher. I said, okay, great. And she said, but relax because they may not get back to us for 6 to 8 weeks. And by the end of the week, I was hired to write as Avery Ames for the cheese shop mystery. So that was my ta-da.
How about you, Krista? You also had a rather long path to publication. Oops, I think we can't hear you, Krista. Did you mute yourself?
I muted my dogs and I want to apologize because they are big dogs. And while I have informed them that they're not supposed to bark now, you know, I have no control over the deer outside. So I'm sorry about that.
That's all right.
It took me 10 years. It was very interesting. I was on a panel once at Malice and everyone, you know, said how long it had taken them. And for four of us, it was 10 years, almost exactly the same for every single one of them. Of course, there was no self-publishing then. So you really had to get an agent and you had to find a publisher. Only one of them was lucky enough to be published right away, but it turned out she was married to somebody in the business. So she had a direct in and we did not, but it took a long time. And there are a lot, I have a lot of manuscripts, you know, under the bed. And I sent a manuscript to what is now Bookends. And there was a lovely agent there, Jackie Satch, who wrote me back and she told me what was wrong with it, which I thought was really nice because she really did not need to do that. And then she asked if I had ever considered writing a cozy. And I have always read cozies. It just never occurred to me to write one. I thought you kind of had to be British. And so I wrote one that she suggested. She suggested the topic and they got great reads on it. Everybody was excited. You know, she was calling me and saying, this is terrific, you know, good news. And then they had an editorial meeting and somebody said, oh no, this is far too depressing. And that was it. It died right there. So, but my future editor was very, very nice. She's a lovely lady. And she felt so bad about that because everybody was saying, oh, you know, this is getting good reads. We like this. So she gave me, she said, send us three topics and we'll tell you which one to write. So I sent them three very brief paragraphs and they picked the domestic divas, which is now we're on book 15 and no one can believe it. So that was how I got there.
Which brings us to your new books. Can you tell those listening in a little bit about A Hint of Mischief, Daryl, and then Krista, the Divas' Cheesecake?
Okay. Well, I'll show it to you first because the cover is so fabulous. I love this cover. A Hint of Mischief is the third Fairy Garden mystery. And I wrote the Fairy Garden mysteries because, well, number one, nobody writes about fairies. And so it was something that was new and novel to the market. And I love to garden. And I'd gone to a Renaissance fair and I saw this woman fairy gardening and I had to make one for myself. And there turned out to be a fairy garden store about an hour and a half from me. So I drove down, I picked up all this stuff and I walked into the store and I went, oh, I think I could make this into a shop. So I got home, I made my fairy garden, and then I wrote three chapters and an overview, and I sent it off to my agent. And I said, what do you think about a gal that opens a fairy garden shop and a real fairy, you know, a fairy sleuth will be her sidekick, and, you know, she'll meet her and the two of them will try to, you know, figure out solve crime. He goes, I don't think so. I said, well, read the chapters. And he read the chapters and he goes, well, they're cute. And I said, okay, how about just at least try to submit them to, you know, Wendy at Kensington, because supposedly she's really open to, you know, something that might be novel and new. And he sold it the next day. So obviously I could write three chapters. And it was very funny because even Wendy, about 6 months later, was giving me my information. And she said, you know, this is a little bit, and I said, young, because it's a young fairy. She's a teenager. And she said, well, yeah. I said, what were you hoping for? Were you hoping for like old ghosts, like in, you know, the old Cosmos show, you know, sophisticated? Did you want a sophisticated fairy godmother? And she said, well, I don't know what I wanted. I said, did you read the three chapters I sent? So I said, I will rewrite them. I'll give you more sophistication. I promise it will be what you want it to be. And luckily we got together on that. So I write this series, it's set in Carmel and features Courtney Kelly, and she is a fairy garden shop owner. And for those that don't know what a fairy garden is, they're little, well, they're all behind me on my shelf. You can do them for inside or outside. They're little, consider them doll housing for gardens. And that is when you know, you use little fairy figurines and you tell a story within a garden. Now there are fairy gardens all over the world. They might just be a fairy door at a tree or something like that. It's just, it's a way of being magical. They're not paranormal. They're not scary other than the murder mystery. They are more on the magical, gentle side of a mystery. They're fun. They're set in Carmel. Anybody who doesn't know Carmel, which is a real place in California, it's a magical place and fairies definitely live there.
And in A Hint of Mischief, there's a party that goes wrong. Is that correct?
Yes. She's throwing a birthday party for a 40-year-old and her sorority sisters. And the party doesn't quite go wrong, but one of the sorority sisters meets her maker. And she is a famous actress and nobody knows, you know, who killed her. But she died and so Courtney can't let the girl that is suspected of it. She loves the girl that is suspected of the murder. And so she jumps in and saying, I will, you know, she's going to try to figure this out. Of course, the detectives are also trying to do it, but Courtney has an inside way to, you know, to get into these people's lives. She's working with all these people that are suspects now. So the party goes off without a hitch. The party is quite wonderful and tasty with lots of adult party things to do.
Krista, how about your latest?
Well, Bobby Sue Bowden is the queen of cheesecakes. She is a self-made woman. Her husband left her with a toddler, and she had to find a way to pay the rent. So she started baking cheesecakes and selling them to restaurants. And now she has her own cheesecake factory. And I say that in quotes because it's not the cheesecake factory. She has a factory that makes cheesecakes and she sends them all over the world. And they've had a very good year and they're expanding. So she wanted to reward her employees with a nice dinner on the water on Midsummer's Eve when fireworks are going off. And the only thing that she asked for was no cheesecake because they eat it every day. It's not special to them. So everything goes fine until her husband doesn't show up and she can't find him. So in the wee hours of Sophie Winston is our protagonist. She's the one who arranged the party. She's an event planner. And she made a bet with her sidekick, Nina Reed Norwood, who is saying there's something wrong with that man. There's something's afoot. And she promises to bake a cheesecake for Nina if that turns out to be the truth. And in the wee hours of the morning, she gets a call. And Nina has won. They can't find him anywhere. And then they do find him, but he's dead. Someone has murdered him.
I thought it was fascinating, Krista, about the Diva series, because if you haven't read them, you might think Diva is a person. You know, that's normally what you attribute it to, but you're really writing about the Diva lifestyle, and kind of, you have both the yin and yang, I guess you'd say, of that in your books.
Yes, I do. Natasha is, actually, when my first project fell through, my editor asked, would this appeal to readers of Real Simple? And I'd never heard of Real Simple. I had no idea what it was. I knew who Martha Stewart was, just didn't know Real Simple. So I drove out to the CVS and found it. And I was looking at it and I thought, oh my gosh, this is like the dueling divas. You know, Martha, who everything is over the top, and Real Simple is trying to make it easier. And that's what, right there in the store, I thought, wow, these are the dueling divas, which is what I called it in the beginning. And then, my editor said, no, that's one of the things we don't want. We want them to be friends. Well, how do I make these two opposites friends? So anyway, yes, Natasha is very opinionated and has her own style. And she is aspiring to be the Martha of the South. And you're right. I think the title, in the beginning, I thought the titles were great. But I think a lot of people are put off now by the word diva because they don't know exactly what it is. So they think it means something else. Anyway, yes, I do have the yin and the yang, and it's also a little bit different in that instead of having a lot of family members, she has a group of friends who help her, and they stick together. Yes,
both of your series,
including her ex-husband,
including her ex-husband.
Both of your series are marketed as cozy mysteries. How would you define a cozy mystery? And why don't we start with you, Krista?
Well, I always like to use Agatha Christie as an example, you know, as kind of the baseline there. And I think that they, obviously mine is takes place right across the water from Washington, D.C., which is a very big city. Even though we think of them as being in small places or small towns, Old Town is sort of a smaller town all itself within this huge metropolitan area. And I try to keep most of the action there. And it's charming because it was built in the 1800s or 1700s. And so it's very old, still has cobblestone streets and alleys. And so it's a little bit different than your average town. And of course, a group of characters that usually know each other. This isn't like a police procedural where they're having to pick some guy out of the entire population. These people generally know each other, the butcher, the baker, you know, all the local people. And I think that makes a big difference. And I personally like that because, you know, it's almost people you know, kind of your neighbors, you know, sort of like peeping into their lives to see what's going on.
How about you, Daryl?
Yeah, cozy mysteries to me mean that there's, and most often, okay, it's a book that you can get cozy with in your chair. You know that there's going to be a resolution at the end, a good resolution. The bad guy's going to get it. You know that there's not going to be a lot of blood, guts, and gore on the page. It's usually a much softer way of murdering somebody. We don't go into detail. We don't usually go into forensic DNA kind of things. And usually the language is a little less salty, so that people can feel comfortable with the fact that, you know, you could ask your grandmother to read the book and don't worry, she's not going to be shocked by the sex and the other things that might show up on the page. So I consider them gentler mysteries. I also agree with Krista. It doesn't matter if it's a big city, it's a group of friends that makes the family and makes the neighborhood what it is. I will say that cozies have a tendency to have a lot of characters in them. And the reason is because we've populated all our stores, all the stores, all the different businesses. After, you know, she's got 15 books, I've got 11 in my cookbook mysteries, and then this one's now the third in the fairy garden mysteries. If you start populating the stores, and you've got characters that come in and out of the lives, and you've got the people that work in the fairy garden mystery, she has a store, she has a clerk. If she's going to go out and solve a murder, she might need another clerk. So I add another person in there. I mean, it's the people that you populate it with that can make it fun, and their characters in and of their own rights. So I love the fact that they can be quirky. I love Natasha. Natasha is one of those great characters, such a foil for Sophie. And in this last book, she is hysterical. I mean, she just has an ego that nobody seems to understand. She reminds me of a friend of mine. And it's just, it's so funny because she'll just say things, you know, and Sophie is so great at letting it just roll off her back. That's Natasha. She'll get over herself. It just is great.
I think we all have a friend like that, don't we? You know, who sometimes just says the most offensive things to us, but you just kind of let it go. I mean, you know.
Well, bless her sweet little heart.
Yeah.
You've both talked a little bit about the settings for your book. In Daryl's case, it's Carmel. I guess the real term is Carmel by the Sea.
Carmel by the Sea.
For that. And Krista, yours is Alexandria.
Old Town Alexandria, yes.
Can you talk a little bit about, is there an advantage to using a real location? Are there pitfalls to it? Talk about the setting, and we'll start with you, Daryl.
So it's interesting. In my other three series, I created towns. And by creating towns, I had to create maps of them and everything else. So I needed to know where the precinct was and where the art store was and where the coffee store was and everything else. When you go to a real town, you can still create some fictional parts of it, which I have. I've created two beautiful courtyards that are in Carmel because Carmel is known for its hidden courtyards, and people can weave in and out of these beautiful little streets and go from one street to the next through a courtyard. So I created two fictional ones, and nobody's called me on those yet. So that's nice, because even with a real town, you sort of want to get the basic locations right. You can put in a store, but you have to say, oh, and that replaced the creamery that had been there for 60 years. I mean, there are things that you have to make sure. In Carmel, there are no mailboxes on any homes. So there is a central post office where everybody goes. And so when I went and did my research, I went into the post office so I could describe it properly, because I knew that somebody who'd read about it would know what that looked like on the inside. You know, the cobblestones in the city, trying to describe the different, you know, parts of the city that are so quaint, and storybook houses, which are renowned in Carmel by the Sea, Comstock houses, and the ocean and the bay itself, which overlooks Pebble Beach Golf Course. You have to get those things right, because somebody could read those and say, you got this all screwy. That's not there, and they aren't there, and those don't do that there. So I do, I'm taking much more particular care in writing about Carmel. And I did mess up in my cookbook nook mystery. I just told Krista and my friends a couple weeks ago, I went, a shop I had on the south side of the street is now on the north side of the street. Don't tell anyone.
Krista, what about your setting?
Well, I have lived in Old Town, and one of the things that is actually so quaint and charming about it is that the houses are right on the sidewalk. I mean, if there's a front yard, there are a few that are mansions, you know, and have bigger yards, but if there's a front yard, we're talking about like 10 feet, just not much at all. And there's so many tourists, and people are walking by, and you know, they have these huge old windows. So I knew that I didn't want to identify a particular house, because I didn't realize we would go 15 books, but I didn't want anyone having, you know, peering in windows and saying, is this Sophie's house? So I was in Washington, and a woman came up to me and she said,
I figured out which house is Sophie's. I drive by it every day on my way to work. And I said, well, you can't have, because I invented that house. It doesn't exist. And she was very disappointed, of course. So I really went out of my way to do that. And I think that's one of the problems with using a real location. You know, you don't want to murder someone in something that exists in a real place, because you don't want it to, you don't want to keep tourists away or anything like that. And if it's something that's privately owned, you certainly don't want to be sued or have people make, you know, think that, that people are murdered there. So that's obviously a big problem. I never gave Sophie an address, but in this last book I had to, because they called the police. So I had to give them an address, and I looked and I looked and I looked, and the streets in Old Town, there's King and Prince and Duke, and then there's Queen and Princess and Orinoco. There's obviously, there was one out of the sequence there. And as I was searching, it turned out that Orinoco used to be called Duchess, but they sold this wonderful tobacco on Orinoco Street, and they changed the name over to Orinoco. So Duchess was just dropped, and it's such a charming name. So now Sophie lives on Duchess Street. She actually has an address. I'm thrilled. And to make it even more odd, I used to live on Orinoco when I lived there. So it all kind of came together. I was so excited when I found out that there had actually been a Duchess Street once upon a time.
That's sweet.
In addition to being called cozies, both of your series I think could also be defined as culinary cozies, because there's a food component to your books, and you include recipes in them. Can you talk a little bit about, I mean, for people that aren't familiar with mysteries or cozies or even food cozies, how do you go about deciding which recipes go in? Are they all made up? Do you like borrow from Martha Stewart? Talk about the whole food component, and we'll start with you, Krista.
As I'm writing the book, things happen. They have breakfast, they have lunch, they have dinner, they go out somewhere. So as foods come up, I consider those four recipes. Sometimes if they're very complicated, I skip them. In fact, I think I skipped a couple in this book that just were kind of beyond me. But I did use one, the Pear Helene, which is so delicious. If you can get pears that are exactly the right ripeness, it is such a fabulous dish. But I just kind of go as they're eating, and I pick up recipes that I think, well, this might be fun to include. In this particular series, I do have recipes in all my series, but in this one, I try to add a dozen recipes, which is a lot of work. And in the next Diva book, I have lemon meringue pie, which I just made today to test.
I was looking at that. It looks great.
I'm done making cheesecakes. I've moved on to lemons. Although there's no lemon theme. It's just it's summertime, and you know, lemon meringue pie is such a traditional thing. So that's how I go about it. I tend to look at recipes that I have. I read recipes, and then I just kind of make them my own by altering things. You know, I've cooked long enough to know, oh, well, that's not going to work, or this is how I would do it. And then I just make it my way.
Yeah. It's interesting, because starting with the cheese shop mysteries, everything had to be about cheese. And when I did it, I would go by the title that was in the book. So if it was The Long Quiche Goodbye, I had a lot of quiches in that book. And then I made a quiche every single book in that series, because that became sort of signature. And if it was about, you know, cheddar, then I had a lot of cheddar dishes. In the Fairy Garden Mysteries, they have teas on the weekends out in the courtyard. And so I decided that most of the foods that would be in the Fairy Garden Mysteries would be tea kind of foods. So brownies and cookies and scones and little tea sandwiches and things like that, that would be, you know, yummy for someone who's thinking about having a fairy garden party. But there's also across the, and so, Courtney is not the chef all the time. She gets some of these things from her friends. Her best friend is Megan Brownie, and Megan Brownie, because of her name, loves brownies. And so there's always a brownie recipe, and I made one yesterday that's so good. I can't wait to share it. It's so good. And so she makes brownies that are included every time. And then there's a bakery up up in the courtyard called Sweet Treats. And Ivana, who works there, she'll be the one that brings in the scones and the cookies. So it's sort of a compilation of those. But across the street, and part of the love interest in Courtney's life, is an old friend of hers from high school who opens a restaurant. His father used to owns a restaurant up in Monterey. And so he opened a restaurant called the Hideaway Cafe, and he's this wonderful cook. So he did all these foods for the fairy garden party. He did appetizers, he did avocado toasts, and, you know, different things. So I get all the spice and sauce comes from Brady. Whatever he wants to put in has more savory aspects as opposed to the sweet aspects, which are for the thing. It's interesting because I think that our readers expect recipes. I don't think a lot of them make them. I, like Krista, I will find a recipe and then I'll tweak it to make it my own. A lot of baked goods, because I need to eat gluten-free, I tweak them anyway because I will make them gluten-free to make sure that they work. But I search the internet, I search my own cookbooks and everything else to find something that will inspire me to make such and such. And like when I was making the avocado toast, I found how to make avocado toast, but then it was like, what do I want to have on top of this? You know, and that's when you go, oh, I want crumbled bacon and I want a salsa and I want it. And then you throw it together. So, but we didn't know when we started out writing mysteries, we were going to have to be cooked.
We never realized that. And I have to say that some of my neighbors are getting kind of tired of it because I keep bringing them food. I mean, yeah. You eat so much cheesecake and you have to make them a couple of times to make sure that they actually work. So yeah, we're all sick of cheesecake up here.
Send them to me. I love cheesecake.
I'm off my cheesecake kick.
Actually, I asked her for a recipe though, because I'd read her book and I didn't have the recipe. And I said, you know, could you please send that to me? And she goes, okay, it's actually most requested. And I said, okay.
Yeah, the chocolate one was definitely the most favorite.
Yeah.
Both of you have written series, mystery series, and are writing series. And I think to me as a reader, it's fascinating when you're an author and you're doing a series, how do you find the right balance with your new book if it's part of a series, to engage somebody who may not have read the first 5 or 10 or whatever, but still keep the older readers who may have been familiar with that book without boring them with details new readers need to know. So I guess at the heart, the question is, how do you find the right balance with each book in a series between new readers and old readers? And we'll start with you, Daryl.
You know, that's a challenge, but I know Krista does too. I keep a compilation of all the details that I've kept in previous books. And the things that I think that matter when it comes to the history, it's sort of like if you're introducing a friend of yours from high school to college, and you'll go, oh, well, okay, this is Krista. And Krista and I were in a writing group back when we were in high school, and she's got the funniest sense of humor, and she's a little bit shorter than me, but her hair's a little bit longer, and she's got this wonderful laugh. Now, that would be enough to bring her into your view. You would get a sense of her, and now you can move on. You've identified who she is and how she fits into the story. And I think that, you know, if each time you can give some of the history with maybe one or two new details, you haven't lost your old readers because they're going, oh, I didn't know that. Like Krista just said, she sold jewelry. I didn't know that. It goes into her profile now, you know, but those little things that you can add so that you're getting enough history that anchors them to who they are, but enough then that it stimulates the previous reader who goes, oh, that's a new thought. Okay. So that's how I do it.
Krista?
Well, I it's the same for me, really. I think you would introduce a character that the protagonist knows anyway. I mean, you would do that for a new book or for the first book in a series or later on. And I think they're just somewhat brief. There's usually a paragraph or two about the relationship between the protagonist and that character. And I think readers know that that's going to end and we're going to get on with the story. So it's a little bit of an information dump, I guess, but you have to do that for the people who haven't even, who've never read the books before. And I noticed that in most of the comments, people will say, I haven't read any of the previous books, but you don't have to because it made sense anyway. So yay, thank you. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, we try to make them stand alone as much as they can.
Yeah.
Having written series, do you find that you need to, I guess, keep what they call a Bible of details, or do you just kind of go on a wing and a prayer? And
well, it's better if you keep a Bible.
Daryl keeps a lot.
I'm getting better at Bibles. I did not keep a lot. What I did is I sort of didn't. I mean, the cheese shop, I had one, so that was, I kept that pretty up to date. But the cookbook nook, I sort of let slide for a couple of years and something slipped through that I had forgotten about. So for the Fairy Garden Mysteries, I'm keeping a very clean Bible of how old they are, what they look like, what car they drive, things like that, because I need to know. You know, I need to know what Fiona the fairy has learned. So I have a whole list of what things she has learned and what words she has said, because she has some fairy language in the books. And so I have to keep total lists of that so I can refer back to it to make sure that I'm saying it right, interpreting it right. I'm not repeating myself, or I am repeating myself deliberately. So it's hard to do it.
I have to say, I'm not as good as I should be at keeping information, because I'm always so into the story. You know, I want to get on with the writing of it, and I don't always stop to make notes. But I do sometimes now take a passage, a description, something that I may come back to, and I'll just put it aside in a folder so that I can refer to it very quickly if I need to, or especially characters who come back that aren't central characters. And sometimes I need the description. And I go back, I confess, I go back to the old books. I can usually remember where they came in. And I flip through really quickly to see, well, did he have brown eyes or blue eyes?
You know. Yeah. You've talked a lot about your work as writers. I'm always fascinated, most writers are also readers. What have you read that you'd like to share with others? Is there particular books that are on your summer reading list this year? Krista, we'll start with you.
Well, Daryl and I are actually reading the same book at the same time, which fits right in here. We've been reading The Judge's List by John Grisham. I have finished it. Daryl's still reading it. So, we're not, no spoilers here. And the other book that we both read, and I think we both loved, was, I wrote these down so I wouldn't forget, Finley Donovan is
Killing.
Yes. Wonderful book.
Loved it.
Oh my
so
gosh.
So much fun.
Yeah. Yeah. We laughed all the way through it. That was great.
Yeah. Well, okay. So I read the Diva Says Cheesecake, and I loved it. I had so much fun. I've kept up with all of Krista's. She is my mentor and my hero. So I keep up with all her books.
Oh my goodness. I
do read, I think, a little bit more than Krista. I've been forcing myself to really try to get some books under my belt. I read The Navigator's Daughter. That's by Nancy Silverman. That's new out. And it was a real nice historical. I'm going to restart the Sid Redondo mysteries because, like Finley Donovan, I just love Wendell Thomas's writing. So I want to read those again because I want to laugh. This is now a time I like to find some mysteries that make me laugh. And Wendell does a great job. And I read Under Lock and Key, A Skeleton Key by Gigi Pandian, and it was excellent. It was really excellent. So that's sort of where I'm at. I got to finish the Judge's List and then I'll find out what I'm reading next.
Okay. I was just going to say, are you both John Grisham fans?
Yes, I think so. And sometimes we just, a book turns up and we talk about it and I'll say, oh, and I'll go, I'll buy it on her recommendation, or, it just like you'd recommend a movie to a friend. It's the same sort of thing. Yeah. I'm just now, while I'm waiting for her to finish, I'm on Dial A for Aunties.
Sutanto. Jesse Sutanto.
Yes. Yes.
That's exactly. That's a cute title. You know, I haven't read everything by John Grisham. I was certainly a major fan when he first came on the scene. Yeah. And then I have to say I sort of slacked off for a while. But she mentioned the judges list and it was like, oh, okay, let's read that. And it's still his good writing. He gets it and he just keeps you moving. You know, a very Robert Spencer is when it comes to, you know, his style, because he's taken out all the attributes. The lines just boom, 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 boom. So
and it's such an interesting premise.
It is an interesting premise.
I think when I read The Firm and I was completely consumed by that when it came out, it was a terrific book. Some of his books have been really great. I must admit, as a reader, some of them I've wanted to throw across the room, but I guess that's right. The mark of a writer who evokes something in you.
Yeah. Well, and sometimes you get to the end and you go, did he have an ending or did he just write this because he had to?
I do have a question for each of you that's kind of individualized because it's a joint program, but I find you both fascinating as authors. Daryl, my question for you is, the cozy mysteries are often called the equivalent of Murder, She Wrote, the television show, the books, but you have your own connection to the television show. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, back when I was acting, that was years and years ago, I was on Murder, She Wrote, and I was dark-haired, and I was a very mean person. My son's bicycle had been stolen. Angela Lansbury was such an absolutely wonderful, wonderful woman. I had a small part. It was with her. She could have gone into her dressing room and had somebody read her lines off the camera to me, and I would have had to respond to whoever that person was. She stood over there and she did that scene over and over again with me so that we got it right. She was just a consummate lady. And so that's my connection to Murder, She Wrote.
And Krista, my question for you is it true that your editor calls you Twisty Christy?
My former editor, yes, called me Twisty Christy. I like a twisting plot. And I had two books in a row, I think I cured myself of being too twisty because I had kind of written myself into corners, you know, where I had to figure out, now how am I going to get out of this? But it worked. And sometimes I think it makes actually for a better book if you have to be smart about it, you know, rather than starting over, you forge ahead. But yeah, she called me Twisty Christy. I now have a different editor, but she might call me that too, but maybe she's just, you know, not going to tell me.
Before we run out of time, and I know it's flown by so quickly, what's next for you as an author? And we'll start with you, Krista.
Well, I have a colorful scheme coming out on August 30th. And because that's not enough, a week later, I have A Good Dog's Guide to Murder coming out. And I'm going to take off that week and just have books on, you know, do book things. So that, yeah, I have two books coming out a week apart at the end of the summer. So that's going to be busy.
Wow.
Daryl?
Well, this is what I've got for this year. So I had a book come out in April that was the 11th in the Cookbook Nook mystery. And then this is the third in the Fairy Garden mystery. And in the meantime, I'm writing. I just got a new deal on the Fairy Garden mystery. So they ordered number 5, but I've turned in number 4. And I'm writing another Cookbook Nook mystery. So that's in the process. And I have a suspense out there because I do write, you know, suspense on the side, you know, in my spare time, but I still love suspense. So I've got one out there to some agents to see if we can find somebody who wants to nab that one for me. So we'll see. We'll see. But I'm still writing my, you know, 2 cozy mysteries a year.
Would you publish your suspense under your
The suspense is all under my name, under Daryl Wood Gerber. But this new one might not be. I may go ahead and go because it's very possible in order to break free of my cozy mystery name, I would have to go under a pseudonym. So that probably means dark glasses and a hat, a fedora and a thing, and you in the shadows so you won't know who it is in the book, right? But I think that may be the way, if that even gets published, we'll see. My other ones were through small publishers and you know, had a good following. I enjoyed writing them. They were a couple of those. So Krista said she had 10 years that she had, you know, written. Well, it took me 10 years as well, maybe longer, to get published. And in that time, you always found agents who said, this is great. Do you have something else? So every year, rather than rewrite the same book that they already passed on, I would write a new one. So I wrote, and I was quite prolific about writing these suspense that nobody was buying. And so it was a matter of, I still love that story. And so I pulled one out, I rewrote it, and then wrote two to follow it. So, you know, it was good. I liked the stories, but I was a different writer. When I picked those up and rewrote them, I was a completely different writer than I was in 2000 to 2010. So that 10 years of maturity of writing this much material on deadline for publishers, I got a better voice, and I think it helped my writing. So at least I hope so.
How can readers learn more about you and your books? Are you on social media platforms? Do you have a favorite one? What's your relationship with social media? We'll start with you, Daryl.
I'm on Facebook. I do a little bit of Instagram and a little bit of Twitter, usually when a book comes out. I'm on Facebook, and Krista and I have a group together called Delicious Mysteries, which we keep active with two other authors. And then I have my website and my newsletter. My newsletter comes out once a month. I have giveaways in my newsletter. I have lots of content on my website. There are trailers, there are book club questions, there are pictures, there are all sorts of things on my website. So I always encourage people to go find me there.
And what is your website?
DarylWoodGerber.com.
How about you, Krista?
What she said.
Except she's not DarylWoodGerber.com.
They're going to go to Daryl's website.
My website is currently at the doctor's. They have some boo-boos that we're trying to figure out. So, but it's up and running. I'm just waiting for them to get back to me and tell me how they fixed this. So, but yes, the same thing. You know, it's we're on all the social media platforms, and we do love Delicious Mysteries. We try to keep that busy. I think these days it's almost the same thing for everyone. Some people are a little more active in one than the other, but I don't have, with writing three books a year, it's either write the books or do the social media. So I'm not on as often as I should be. And I always tell people, please don't message me, because it could be a week, 10 days before I go and look at the messages. Just email me. Those I look at all the time. So I'll get an email, Krista at KristaDavis.com.
So neither of you have plans for book talk?
Or what's book talk?
Book talk. It was like TikTok. For books.
Oh. No.
Okay. But now I don't feel so bad, because I didn't know about it either till shortly ago.
You know what? I think those things, you know, TikTok is for a younger generation that probably don't read cozy mysteries. If I was writing YA, I would be doing book talk. I'd be doing TikTok. I'd be doing all sorts of stuff, but I'm not writing YA. So I think it's a different audience. Don't you, Krista?
I'm not sure. They told me that I needed to be on it. So I'm on it. But I really don't do anything. And the trouble is that TikTok is really mostly videos. They're just really short videos. And I'm one of those people who, you know, I'll tape something and I'll think, oh no, and then I'll do it again. And, you know, 500 times later, I've accomplished nothing all day but a 5-second video. So I'm not sure that that's the best place for me, just because I need to spend that time writing.
It's the diva perfectionist in you that you want to get it right before you put
Maybe
it out there.
So. Yeah.
Well, I can't believe we've already run out of time. It's just been so delightful having both of our authors here at the Poison Pen virtually, Daryl Wood Gerber, whose new book is A Hint of Mischief, and Krista Davis, whose new book is The Divas' Cheesecake. I'd like to thank them both for sharing time with us today, and thank you all for tuning in to another virtual author event at the Poison Pen Bookstore.
Thank you, John.
Thank you for having us.
Well, and bye, my sweet friend.
It's you, Krista.
I thought that was for some special person.
Well, you never know. That could be the mystery. Thank you.
Oh, now we have a new idea.
There you go. And in case I lose you as we click off, thank you. We really appreciate you both.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Hello. We hope you're enjoying our programs and podcasts with authors. We'd like to expand them, and your help would be appreciated. Please make a donation at poisonedpenfoundation.org. 100% of the proceeds will go to help connect authors with readers in this difficult time. Thank you.